Well, good morning, it's LV104 and it's Folk Tales, and a slightly special edition of Folk Tales because we're recording an interview with Tony and Rebecca about TEDx Sherborne. They were kind enough to come into the studio back in December and talked a little bit about the concept, but we thought it would be good to catch up again and see how the arrangements have moved forward. So, good morning, Tony. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Tony, can I start with you and ask you just to remind us what TED is and what TEDx is all about and what you're trying to do, really?
So TED is a global phenomenon. It's an online platform that shares amazing, powerful, short talks on ideas worth spreading. And it can trace its history back to the early 1990s when it started life as a conference. And then when YouTube and broadband came along, it realized it could massively amplify its impact by migrating online. And then along came TEDx about 10 years ago when they realized that the only thing that was stopping their growth was content. And so they started issuing licenses to local organizers around the world to create their own events and then upload their talks. So all the talks are filmed and then edited and then uploaded onto the TED platform. So nowadays, it's a platform of content of these short talks that are harvested, created from all around the world. There are something like 2,700 TEDx events around the world that have had something like a billion views online, on such a wide range of topics. And TEDx Sherborne is we've managed to get the local license to be able to put this event on. Just to give some UK and Ireland context, there's something like 50 TEDx events in the UK. There's a TEDx event in London in the Royal Festival Hall with 2,500 people at it. There's a TEDx event in Bristol, one in Exeter, probably our closest ones. There was one for the first time in Torquay last year, and there's one in Folkestone. There was one in Frome last year. So, you know, this is not rocket science. It's not a new thing, but this is the first time it's been brought to Sherborne. We're really excited about it.
And it was your idea to try and get it to Sherborne.
My ridiculous idea to take this on because no one else would. So I think someone else knew it was going to be a lot of work and they were right.
We'll talk a little bit in a moment about what the day will look like, but we should say first up that it's on the 9th of May.
Correct.
And it will be held, the actual event itself is going to be held in the brand new Sherborne Girls Music
Centre.
Arts Centre, yeah. Which is a huge
hot
auditorium.
On the heels of there's the Abbey Festival in there just before us, and then they clear out, we do our dress rehearsal, and the following day we have our event. It's an amazing, amazing new venue. It's like a contemporary cathedral-like space, very lofty, with capacity for about 350 people, but it's a concert hall, it's a recital hall in essence. Amazing acoustics, and we're taking that over for the day.
And tell me what the day will look like. You have a number of speakers, and we'll talk a little bit more about them in a moment, but how many speakers, first of all, is it?
We have 14 speakers now. Okay. And they're each going to talk on a specific topic, specific idea for up to 18 minutes. That's the absolute limit they're allowed to under TED rules. We'll be starting sort of early in the morning, just gone 9, finish about 5:30 in the afternoon. And to give the audience, whether it's the live audience or our online audience, a bit of light relief in between, because some of the topics, as Rebecca will come on to tell you, are quite gritty, very contemporary issues, and could be quite hard going and emotional for some of the audience. We'll be interjecting it with bits of entertainment, what we're calling interludes of various types, as we go through the day, as well as lots of time in between for people to, in the audience to interact and discuss what they've been listening to.
When we last spoke, you were just approaching the deadline for applications for speakers. That obviously passed in early December, and you've now done your interviews, I believe, not that long ago.
Yeah,
was that process like?
Well, we auditioned. So we had a long list. We had an amazing response, which was great. So the schools were highly invested. So Sherburn Boys, Sherburn Girls, Lewiston and the Griffin, they were very involved and they generated topics that they wanted to hear talks about. And then the schools went through their own process of long listing and short listing, which was extraordinary, being very, very supportive, all of the schools. And then we had the pleasure of hearing the final eight. And we're not telling you who the final four are yet, five in fact now, because there's been some changes of schools for one. But it's very exciting. And then with the adults, we met, we had a good long list of people that we could deal with, and then we invited them to audition. So we auditioned at the boys' school and the girls' school, and they had to give a pitch. And then have to be questioned by us. Because as Tony says, the main thing about TED is it's not particularly necessarily about personalities or fame or whether you've written a book or not. It's about the idea. It all has to come down to the idea that's worth spreading. And that's quite unusual, I think, for a lot of big media events. It can become about personalities. But here it's much more about the ideas themselves.
And you gave them an overall theme, which we mentioned last time, was fit for the future. They are able to embellish that in whatever way they choose, are they? How does that work?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it's about trying to create a narrative arc through the day. So you'll people who listened in on the last conversation we had will recall that the first thing we did when we chose Fit for the Future as a theme was to go out. We conducted a survey with 600 young people across the community to ask them what the top of mind issues were. And that gave us a framework. So there were a range of things like mental health, coping with pressure, the age divide and how we bridge that more effectively between the young and old in the community, as well, and a host of other issues. And so we used that as our framework. So when we were doing the call for speakers, either through the schools or across the community, we were looking for some degree of alignment to that, but we were also completely open to curveballs that would surprise us and delight us. And there's one or two of those in the mix.
There are.
I appreciate you can't tell us who the speakers are at this
point.
Not
quite yet.
Announcing that at the end of February, but perhaps you can give us a bit of a flavour of the topics.
We can. Well, they're really very broad, which is very exciting. There's the consideration of what reading might mean in a digital age, for example, how reading might consider to be quite radical as an act, given contemporary attitudes to reading. Then there's also this idea of truth-telling, this idea of possibly a post-truth world and the narratives we tell ourselves, the narratives that countries and places tell themselves, and how actually truth-telling becomes an increasingly courageous act and an important act. Somebody very local wanting to talk about the work they do with a particular group of vulnerable young people, and being very specific about what those narratives involve and how actually there need to be changes in public policy, in private community type action and what they might involve. Some of the lighter ones being basically how to grow old really well, and looking at the advice of people over centuries as to how you might be able to do that. Looking at things like transportation, how transportation can in fact become transformation if you look at it in a different way. Also down to the serious of mental health and obviously the changes that have been happening worldwide in a contemporary sense, but being able to look at that in different ways as well from a personal perspective, but also from considering how obviously statutory services and the National Health can't possibly meet all of that need, and how communities like ours might be able to in fact meet those needs in different ways. So it ranges really all the way from the other to our town, to our nation, to our world. And then all of those people, what's been lovely about it is the narrative arc has almost sort of fallen into place for us, with all of those engaging very closely, whether they're students or whether they're adults, whether they've got long-term experience speaking in public or they've got some kind of name that people will recognise, or they are local people who simply applied through the website, is that they have all come together in really thinking about how we can make Sherburn an even better place to be. And we recently all put them all together for a photo shoot, and it was lovely watching them all meet each other and realising how they fitted in with each other's subjects, with each other's days. And a 14-year-old girl talking to, you know, much older woman who'd had experience, and but them both learning from each other. And it was really very moving watching that kind of networking in action and seeing how that might lead to concrete change, which is ideally what this is all about.
I remember that last time you said that the community was really behind this and you'd had a lot of interest in it. I imagine you must have had quite a lot of applications to be speakers. How did you then decide who made the final cut then?
Well, we met as a group because obviously we wanted it to be relatively democratic, and the sort of organising committee of TEDx is quite broad in our experience and also in our connections with Sherbin. And so we just had a really good sit down and talk about it all. We were quite sensible, I think, in terms of thinking generally how did it fit with Fit for the Future? To what extent was it a clear idea? To what extent could it lead to concrete action? And then we debated all of those amongst us and came down to that shortlist. And then auditioning, it wasn't necessarily the person who was the most slick, although some were. It was more whether we felt that person had, really it came down to a personal engagement that was passionate enough that it was something that other people here, but also potentially nationally and globally, would think, oh, I haven't thought of that before, and that's somebody I'm interested in listening to.
It was really tough. I mean, you know, being on a judging panel, selecting people, when you know, I mean, you know, you've been there yourself, you know, putting your name forward for something, and you know that people have invested in it, they've put time and effort into thinking through, and, you know, the kind of the hope is there that they're going to select it. So you feel really bad saying no to anybody. But the good news is we're hoping this is going to be an annual event. So if not this year, there's always another chance next year for people that haven't been successful this time.
And I think you said last time, Tony, that you weren't necessarily looking for polished performances so much as interesting ideas.
Yes, in the sense that if you did have a polished performance, that wouldn't be working against you as such. But that we were looking for raw talent as well, people who we could help to coach to become much better speakers than they currently are. So, and we've got, as Rebecca said, we've got a real mix, really, people who are pushing themselves forward to speak about something they're passionate about, but they're not confident as a presenter, who will need a lot of support and work, but will nail it on the day.
And actually, that's been, I think, very impressive. Not all TEDx events audition. They cherry pick the kind of people they want to be involved. And I think the advantage for this, Tony was very clear at the start, of wanting to provide a space whereby people who are around here, let's face it, if you've lived here and you know the area really well, you're going to know stuff and you'd not necessarily have been able to develop your ideas about that. So I think it was really important that actually people had the space. And there were surprises. There were surprises. There were a couple of speakers when Tony and I disagreed and then they arrived and I thought, oh, okay. They, you know, wow, that really is something pursuing, you know, and vice versa. And I think that's been very powerful. I think when they're announced and people see what that narrative arc might look like, I think genuinely people are going to be able to see how that relates directly to them, but also might provoke them to think differently, which, after all, is hopefully the aim.
And we will know the names at the end of February, is this correct?
Yeah, we're keeping our powder dry, really, just in out of respect for Sherborne Times, who are our print media partner, who've been so supportive in terms of providing us with feature space and so on. So there's a feature going in the March issue of Sherborne Times, which comes out on the 28th. So there will be press releases to other media outlets that are embargoed to the 28th, but that's the day we'll reveal. And the other thing we're hoping to do is then start putting together little mini interviews, podcasts, and, you know, little short video clips on YouTube and so on, that we can just start to build some backstory around, you know, who the speakers are, you know, what where they've come from, why they're so passionate about the idea they're going to be talking about, without giving their game away in terms of what they'll actually talk about on the day. But just to generate more engagement and excitement and get the conversation going.
And what about the rest of the day? We talked last time about there being some performances interspersed to liven things up.
Yeah, there are indeed. We, you know, from local dance outfit, Misfits, we can do a shout out to them, who we saw at the Christmas shopping day outside Waitrose. And Tony and I looked at each other and said, they're in. They were just completely fabulous. But also, again, back to our fabulous schools. So there'll be poets from schools, there'll be DJs from schools, writers from schools, actors from schools. And the schools are being brilliant in the way they're working across. So there's art projects, there's design projects, photography projects, all those kind of things are across school. But also other interest groups. So there's some input from the Rendezvous Project as well in terms of music and performance. So there's going to be a little, there's quite a wide variety and some short film on the day as well in a sort of form of art installation. So they happen between, but there will also be representatives from all sorts of different people who will have a sort of the equivalent of a kind of a stall or a stand on the day so that you come out from the talks and there are some of the people that you've been hearing about or thinking about. So SHARE, the Sherborne organisation that supports Syrian refugees, they'll be there. And so there's, again, that those conversations can carry on during the day. I think everyone will be exhausted afterwards, but they will certainly be inspired, I think, and yeah, ready to sort of put some of those ideas into action.
Plenty of networking opportunities.
Indeed. And I think that's the great joy on the day. But also, as I know Tony will come on to talk about, that if one, even if you aren't actually physically in the room, that you will be able to take part in it. And
well, we talked last time about streaming. Has that moved on at all?
It has. So we now have a film partner. So Compass Video, it's a local video production company, who have kindly agreed to pro bono put together all of our filming and post-production on the day, as well, including the live streaming. They're taking care of all that for us. So that's in the bag. We know that's going to be produced to a really professional standard. And the deal is, by virtue of the fact that we've got, this is our first year, we're restricted by our TEDx license in its first year to it to a cap on the audience size of 100. So we've been thinking right from the start, well, how do we enable more people to tune in and watch this on the day? How do we reach out to surrounding villages around Sherborne? And live streaming seems such an obvious thing to do for those that want to tune in, whether they're, you know, the grandparents of, you know, one of the children on stage who they can't get in into the audience, but they want to watch from home, or whether it's, you know, just local communities that want to come together who want to start a conversation around one of the issues that's getting raised on the day. So we've been in talks with the likes of the Abbey community about how we can get perhaps their parish teams involved. You know, we'd like to think that the local landlords in pubs in surrounding villages and so on, or people who are running the village halls or community centres, might think about how they could host a screening party on the day. We'll be putting a toolkit together to help them do that. And that's something that we'll be releasing details about on the website on tedxsherborne.com nearer the time.
And if people actually do physically want to go and watch, and I guess a lot of people will, how do they get the best opportunity of doing that?
So we talked about this a little bit last time, and the plan initially was that we would do a seat ballot. That we would people could put the names in a hat and we would just draw out 100 names, and those would be the people that came. The plan slightly changed in that we were hoping that we'd be able to raise enough money to be able to fully cover the cost of putting the event on. That hasn't happened to be the case. We've just fallen a little bit short. So it means we're going to have to charge for tickets, but what we'll do is release them. They'll go on general sale on the 1st of March. So just after we've announced the speakers on our website, if people go onto the website on the 1st of March, there will be details that link through to Eventbrite and they can buy tickets there. But we're trying to price them at a point that's accessible to just about anyone. So it's £30 for a full day of entertainment, including lunch, which is a pretty good bargain, I think.
Mm-hmm. Anything else that's new since we last spoke that we haven't already covered? You've got your speakers, you've got some of the entertainers lined up.
Yep.
We know when the tickets are going to be on sale. We know mm-hmm. when the list is going to be released.
Mm-hmm.
And it's full steam ahead, really, isn't it?
It's full steam ahead, really. Mm-hmm. I think the thing to be thinking about now is, particularly in terms of live stream, is that, you know, can this be a lightning rod for some of these issues that we're going to talk about on the day for the wider community, you know, sort of going further out into Dorset, you know, and some of the other market towns who can relate to the kind of context that Sherborne's in, whether it's Blandford Forum or Wimborne and so on. And if we can find ways of communities from the wider Dorset tuning in, getting conversations mm-hmm. going around these kinds of issues, that would be fantastic. And Waitrose, I know in conversation with Steve Lee, the local manager, he's very keen through their other branches elsewhere in Dorset to engage their customers and communities in what we're doing here as well. That's quite exciting.
And at the end of the day, when you go home and put your feet up very late that evening, I suspect.
there might be a glass of wine or two afterwards.
What's the measure of success? How do you want to look back on it?
So I've got a good friend who runs an organisation down in Cape Town. And she employs about 100 people and it's grown very rapidly. They do amazing work in schools across South Africa. And I was asking her once, what's the measure of success for you? And she said, I have one indicator. It's the sparkle in people's eyes. That's and that will do for me.
Quite right. Because there isn't actually a winner at the end of it. You know, you don't know, judge one of them as being the best speaker.
No. I'm being a bit trite, but we've had an amazing response in terms of volunteers. You know, people like Rebecca and Laura and Chris and the wider team, who have put countless hours into organising this. You know, for no reward save for, you know, hopefully a successful event, the satisfaction of giving back to the community. And the same thing is true of the schools who have really put their back into this as well, and the local business community and so on. So, you know, number one, I want to come out of the event at the end of the day with everyone feeling sufficiently inspired by the whole thing and with sufficient fuel left in their tank to go, great, but let's do it again next year. Yeah, that's so important to build Absolutely. On this.
Look, we'll catch up again before the event, I'm sure, just in the run-up to find out how the final arrangements are going. But for the time being, thank you for coming back to us and letting us know
it's
how things
pleasure,
are going.
It's a pleasure, Terry. Thank you. Thank you.
And
we hope it continues to gather pace, which it looks like it certainly is.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
What a difference a day makes. 24 little hours brought the sun and the flowers where they used to be rain. My yesterday was blue, dear. Today I'm a part of you, dear. My lonely nights are true, dear. Since you said you were mine, oh my, what a difference a day makes. There's a rainbow before me. Skies above can't be stormy. Since that moment of bliss, that thrilling kiss, it's heaven when you find romance on your menu. What a difference a day makes, and the difference is you. above can be stormy. Since that moment I bliss, that thrilling kiss, it's heaven when you find romance on your menu. What a difference a day makes.